This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Floyd, and I'm filling in for Tony Perkins today. I'm the senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas. I want to encourage you to follow Tony Perkins today at T Perkins on Twitter, at T Perkins on Twitter. And also, you can always look for these broadcasts and many other things on frc.org, frc.org. I would be a wonderful opportunity for us today if we would be able to listen carefully to this program. It's going to be extremely dynamic. We have Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina, and we're going to be talking to Congressman Walker about his new role as chairman of the Republican Study Committee, and also talk through some of the transitions that are going on in Washington, D.C. with our president-elect and the forthcoming transition of that administration. We're also going to be talking with about a school district in Texas that banned a Charlie Brown Christmas decoration. We're going to be talking to Texas's Attorney General Ken Paxton. He's going to weigh in on that, and we're going to have a few moments with him. And also, later on, we're going to be talking in the broadcast about what happened in Ohio yesterday. Ohio Governor John Kasich vetoed one abortion bill, but signed another one. And we're going to be talking to the president of the Ohio Right to Life, Michael Ganadakis. And so we really hope that you'll stay with us today all the way through the broadcast. We hope that you'll tell a friend and encourage them to join us also today. Now, this afternoon and on this broadcast, we have an extraordinary privilege to interview and to talk with Congressman Walker from North Carolina. He is the vice chairman of the Emergency Preparedness Response and Communications Subcommittee, and as a member of the House Committees on Oversight and Government Reform of Homeland Security and Administration. You know, he has been involved in a lot of things along the way, and just recently, he was elected as the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. And so today, what we're going to do, we're going to talk to him about this new role. But we do know that Congressman Walker was raised in a pastor's home, but chose a business career before becoming a pastor himself. And then 3 years later, he decided to run for the United States Congress. Congressman Walker, we welcome you to the Washington Watch today.
Pastor Ronnie Floyd, you are one of the great beacons of light. I appreciate your work over the years, not just in Arkansas, but throughout the world. It's a privilege to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much, Congressman. Let me ask you a question. How did you come to the decision about entering into Congress, and how did two decades of ministry prepare you for that?
Well, that's a great question. I really began to think about it, pray about this, about 3.5 years ago. Had no political background, obviously. I served in business right out of college for a few years, and then spent nearly 17, 18 years working as a full-time vocational pastor. But I really began to grow more and more concerned about the direction of our country, and was really some of the vitriol that we see sometimes being used. I just thought, is there a way that we can talk about our conservative values, our conservative principles, so those things that traditionally have made this country great? Was there a way to communicate those to a new community, to new people groups? And we decided to step away from the ministry, put everything that we had into it, and God provided a path. And we were able to win there in 2014, finishing up our second year here, our first term here in the United States Congress.
Well, we're excited about what you've done, and what a tremendous joy it's been to be able to work with you along the way, Congressman. Recently, you were elected as the chairman of the Republican Study Committee, and we'd like for you to tell us what is the Republican Study Committee and what is its role in the United States Congress?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. About a year ago, began to think about potentially running for position of chairman of what we call the RSC here in D.C., Republican Study Committee. Historically, in 1973, there were a group of members that felt like that we were getting away from our conservative values even nearly 50 years ago now, 45, 46 years ago. And they launched the Republican Study Committee. I believe it was at the latter part of the Nixon administration or somewhere toward the second term. And they were to be able to set aside for conservative ideology to make sure that the legislation that we were passing represented the conservative history of our country. And we've had some great chairmen in the past. In fact, Tom Price, who was recently appointed, or will be appointed, HH Secretary. Mike Pence was the chairman nearly a decade ago. But we're excited about making sure that whether it's the leadership or whether it's other people, to make sure that we're not filling out on some of the values and some of the things. And this really covers a wide range of topics, from religious liberty to foreign policy to entitlement reform. We are a conservative think tank, but what my goal is to try to stretch the boundary for more than just being a conservative think tank, not just the policy side, but understand what it takes to get that message across the finish line, something we call effective conservatism. We're excited about that. In fact, we've been planning a retreat today, incorporating the three or five things that we believe is important for us to tackle early on in the Republican Study Committee.
Well, that surely helps us all understand a little bit more of that. And, you know, we are very committed at FRC to be able to talk about faith and family and freedom. And you know my commitment personally to protecting religious liberty as well as all of those matters. Let me ask you this question. Can you talk a little bit further about what the Republican Study Committee and how they work together toward protecting religious liberty? Because so many of our listeners today across America are very concerned about the direction of this subject across America.
Well, and I think they should be, Ronnie. We've seen a deterioration when it comes to those being able to practice their faith, what they believe, whether it's ministers, whether it's nonprofits. In fact, when somebody asks me sometimes what's the most surprising moment that I've experienced in our first couple of years here in Washington, D.C., I go back to a night on the floor where there was an amendment that came up through the Rules Committee, but simply was to discriminate against those who hold religious values. For example, if an adoption agency chose to put a child in a home, whether there was a mother and a father, and excluded other groups, they would be literally guilty of breaking the law. They would lose nonprofit status. They would be up for other potential charges. That vote, to push it back, only passed by one vote that night. 35 Republicans voted with our friends on the left to try to target some of these religious groups. This is not something that, you know, the pastors and other people that used to talk about this is what's coming. It's here now. This is happening in real time. The RSC's job is to make sure that we're getting legislation not only the House, to the Senate, to the President's desk, that's going to protect generations of people who want to continue to practice their faith and their values without having the threat of the federal government coming in with either charges or other concerns.
Well, Congressman Walker, in just a few minutes from now, we're going to be taking some calls from across America. And before I ask you the next question, and before we go to break a few moments from now, or a few minutes from now, I want to give everyone who would like to ask Congressman Walker a question. He's going to be on with us later on about those questions you have, and you'll be able to talk to him and ask him that. But if you would, write down this toll-free number. It is 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Now, Congressman Walker, let me talk about some of those other matters that might be on the heart of the RSC and all that you're doing. What are some of those other issues that you foresee that is going to have to be dealt with in the right manner in order to see it move toward the future in the United States?
Sure. I think the American people spoke very loudly and very clearly that the Washington as usual is no longer apropos of where we are in our country. It's one of the reasons that I ran 2 years ago. In fact, if you look across the board, even with this new class, the 115th class, Lonnie, we are seeing more veterans, more teachers, even some ministers, more business people. And no offense to my friends who represent the lawyers and attorneys, but there is certainly a role for that. But you're seeing more and more people coming from real-life positions who have families, who've been connected with their communities, to talk about the issues across the board. Some of those issues, obviously, that we feel like are very important is tax reform. For decades, Washington has promised that we would do something with tax reform. Mm-hmm. In the last 8 years, the tax code has expanded from 67,000 pages to nearly 75,000 pages. And we've seen some of our friends being targeted by the Internal Revenue Service. I believe we're at a place, hopefully at the Ways and Means, and Kevin Brady is chairman, that we're at a place now that in the year 2017, that we see real tax reform come about. Hopefully, and we will see that, but certainly without getting too much in the weeds here, we need to see the tax reform path, keeping free deductions, higher education, mortgage interest, and of course, charitable giving. We right. believe that's doable this year. There are some other issues as well, repealing Obamacare, but and hopefully we'll have time, maybe we'll take a phone call or two, but we've also got to talk about some of the non-historical Republican issues, things like immigration, women's health care, race relations. There's no reason that Republicans shouldn't be leading on these issues. If we truly believe we have the truth about individual liberty and opportunity, these are areas where Republicans and conservatives should be leading.
Well, there's no question about that, Congressman, and thank you for being willing to get on those issues, because those are the issues that are real-life issues and issues that really are really the heart of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that he came to set us free. And to be free indeed, he came to set us right with God and right with one another. And we need to live out our faith in what we proclaim and say that we are, those of us that are followers of Jesus Christ. And so with this, let me ask you this, and it has to do with this whole issue of immigration and some of those matters relating to that. And before we go to break in just about a minute or so from now, let me ask you, could you talk to us about that issue? That is really hot on the hearts of a lot of people across America. What do you think about that? In a minute, can you just kind of give us a digest of where you feel that could be going?
Yeah, I can do an overview. Obviously, it's a much more detailed and complex issue. But we have to be able to move past and just saying every time we're asked about it, we've got to secure the border. Well, then what? We have millions of people here, and there is an adage or a theory that we need to do a mass deportation. I don't believe that is feasible or budget-wise that we're able to sustain right now. But I do believe there needs to be a long-term plan as far as a viable solution for people who've been in our country for sometimes decades. I know one pastor recently told me he had over 200 undocumented workers in his church. We've got to take the lead in this, and if we have time, maybe a call or two, we can get into a little bit more detail today.
That'd be great. Thank you, Congressman Walker. In just a moment, he's going to be back with us. And we want to urge you that if you're listening today and you want to talk to Congressman Walker right now, we'd love for you to call us at 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. And if you have a question for the congressman or to us here today, it would be a privilege to talk with you. We're going to be back in just a moment after our commercial break. We may even talk about the transition that is going on in Washington, D.C. in just coming days from now. Thank you again for the Washington Watch, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Every day, more schools around the country are giving in to the transgender agenda. Boys claiming to be female are already being allowed into girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. What can parents do to stop this disturbing trend from spreading to their children's schools? Family Research Council is now offering a new resource to help. A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education is a concise brochure that can be downloaded at frc.org/gender. To order hard copies, call 800-225-4008. You'll learn valuable tips on how to talk to your children, their teachers, school board members, neighbors, and fellow churchgoers, and the steps you can take to prevent the advancement of the transgender agenda in your school. Again, the number is 800-225-4008 to request this brochure. Your gift of just $5 will cover the cost of shipping and handling, and additional copies are available for $1. thank you for standing strong for the family.
Merry Christmas from 8 Days of Hope. We want to thank you, the American Family Radio listener, for supporting 8 Days of Hope as we serve disaster victims in 2016. Volunteers from across the country that heard about 8 Days of Hope on AFR came to Texas and Louisiana, South Carolina, and West Virginia to help out flood victims. You came to Mississippi to help out flood victims and tornado victims. And then in October, we happened to be in South Carolina where Hurricane Matthew hit. And we had thousands of people there that were willing to help and serve and love others who needed our assistance. Thank you for your volunteering. Thank you for your financial support. But most of all, thank you for your prayers for 8 Days of Hope. Please continue to pray for 8 Days of Hope as we move to 2017. We hope that you and your family have a Merry Christmas and a joyous New Year.
That's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope, a ministry partner of the American Family Association. You can learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Ronnie Floyd, senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas, the immediate past president of the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm filling in today for Tony Perkins. We're here with Congressman Walker from North Carolina, and we're going to be taking calls. And if you have any calls for any questions for Congressman Walker, would you please right now call us at 866-372-7234. I believe we have a someone on the line. Bill. And so, Bill, we welcome you to the Washington Watch. Would you please ask your question?
Hello, I'm on the line. I'm on right now.
Yes, you are.
Oh, well, good afternoon. Yeah, the question I got is, why is the congressman calling them undocumented instead of illegal immigrants? And I'd like to know what happened to the committee that he's on that over the last 8 years to keep our conservative principles in mind. And I'll get off and listen offline.
Thank you very much, Bill, for your question. Congressman Walker, would you like to address that question today?
Absolutely. Thank you, Ryan. Bill, thank you for taking the time to call in today. When I was quoting that, I was actually quoting a pastor who referred to them as that. Yes, these are people who broke the law, and I don't believe that, this is my personal opinion here, that citizenship is in line for those who've broken the law. The other aspect of it, not to make this conversation all about the immigration side, but there are people who have tried. I've got a friend from Canada who for eight, nine years went about trying to follow the law and gaining citizenship. So I'm not trying to make the case that we give people a pass. Yet at the same time, we have to have more of a plan than just simply talking about securing the border as our top three particular strategies. We've got to move beyond that, secure the border, absolutely 100%. The second part of your question, as far as the committee that's served on the last 8 years, not sure what committee that you're referring to, and the other aspect of that, I am, this is our first term in Congress. You might be referring to either Homeland Security or the Republican Study Committee. I know there has been several plans and pieces of legislation that have been put forth, potentially vetoed by the president. In fact, we haven't, I don't know if we've been able to get anything across his desk that he hasn't vetoed, simply for the fact that we've lacked two-thirds of both the House and and the Senate to be able to override such a presidential veto.
All right. Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate that answer. We now have on the line from Missouri, John. John, welcome to the Washington Watch. Would you ask the Congressman the question?
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. You know, on this immigration thing, you know, I would just like to say this last election, this is exactly what the inaugural address that John Kennedy said with passing the torch to a new generation of Americans. That's not true. It's to the old guard of Americans. It's people like me who are 70 years old who got off their chair and said, you know what? Take your pick. We either lose this country, give it to the Muslims and everybody else, or we figure out a way how to deal with that. And that's why everybody woke up and said, well, who voted for this guy? And I tell you what, if that shouldn't take every congressman and every U.S. senator to stand up and say, you know what, I should probably get back to my people and see what they think. After all, I think that's what my job is, to represent my constituency. And that's what you guys should start doing. What they should really do, Congressman, they should start finding out how these people who are in Congress and senators can be impeached when they don't follow what their constituency feels. They just go out and vote and say, well, that guy from North Dakota, if we vote for him, we help his pipeline, we're going to be getting a new park. Tell you what, it's all screwed up. You know it as well as I do. I know congressmen all over. I know some of the U.S. senators are my good friends. And I tell you what, it's so screwed up that somebody better dust himself off and figure, you know what? Let's take care of Americans first. These other people, get out of here.
Well, let's thank you very much, John, for your comments. Congressman, what are your thoughts about maybe something that John said, if you'd like
to
comment at all?
I'm happy to address that. I was trying to find the question in there, but I'm happy to respond to comment. Listen, I get the frustration. It's one of the reasons that I left ministry 2.5 years ago, because some of those same frustrations. In fact, I ran on term limits. I ran on a grassroots campaign. I was not endorsed either by the Republican establishment or even my own delegation there in North Carolina. There were 6 or 7 guys ahead of me. But we stepped out by faith because we wanted to talk about these issues. And I think John is exactly right when he says that we need to be having not only conversations about some of the easier topics, we've got to get in the weeds and talk about what's important to the American people. And this is what we're trying to do. I think it'd be a much easier path just to go down sometimes Republican talking points. But we've got to talk about issues that matter, not just to our base. Because if we truly believe in our message, it should be good enough for all communities. And to me, that's when we talk about effective conservatives. Anybody can be conservative, but is our goal to be conservative and effective, or just conservative? Well, one of the reasons that we have the highest voting records as far as conservative records, even if you look at these scorecards, I believe it's important to be a rock-solid conservative, but also to be able to use the talents and skills that we've all been given to not only preach to the choir, to use a spiritual metaphor or analogy there, but to be able to talk about communities who've seen poverty, who've seen lower school and education, who have lower unemployment. To me, that should be all of our goal, not just members of Congress.
Well, thank you, Congressman. I think you're right in what you're saying. And we just have a moment before we have to go to break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking with the Texas Attorney General, Rex Paxton, who will be here to join us to discuss another case of the War on Christmas. This time, it's about Charlie Brown Christmas decoration being banned in a school. You do not want to miss listening to and our conversation with Attorney General from Texas, Rex Paxton. Congressman Walker, thank you for being on the Washington Watch, and we pray that God will give you enormous favor in days to come. We look forward to hearing from you again. Blessings, and we'll see you right after the break.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we still are waiting for industrial production numbers. They'll be out later on this week, but we've got retail sales numbers and core producer price index numbers, which were way off. As a matter of fact, retail sales number, they were expecting 0.3% increase. They got 0.1%. By the way, folks, this is November. Yes, that means it does include Black Friday and Cyber Monday and all that good stuff. So way below expectations. I don't know. I think all these retail sales numbers are so skewed because, number one, the expectations have been so off for so long that they have lost touch with reality, and they need to come up with some sort of new normal for retail sales, which, by the way, does not justify maintaining so many brick-and-mortar stores, and that's something they're going to have to wrestle with retailers over the next few months. Speaking of retailers, apparently a report out that Macy's is no longer going to support Planned Parenthood. That's good news if that is true. You can find that on my Twitter feed at Financial Issues, where I referred back to the article that reported it. Also, industrial production, very, very important. It's expected to be negative. I wouldn't be surprised based on these numbers if it's not a little bit more negative than we think. And of course, everyone is hanging on to the Federal Reserve. What are they going to do? They're going to raise interest rates. Of course, they're going to raise interest rates. And we're expecting two of them, two increases for 2017. Anything beyond that would not be factored into the market and could be somewhat of a problem. But in all likelihood, we are going to see interest rates up, certainly, this week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Sitting in for Tony Perkins today, my name is Ronnie Floyd, and I'm a senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas. The state of Texas, which is my home state, just recently a school district there says it will not budge on its decision to ban a Charlie Brown Christmas decoration from an office door. Texas's Attorney General Rex Paxton says, hey, not so fast. In fact, Attorney General Paxton, welcome to the Washington Watch.
Hey, it's great to talk to somebody from Yoakum, Texas.
Well, thank you, my friend. Hey, we're playing for the state championship this week Darrell Royal Stadium, in Dallas. I'm sorry, that's where we played last weekend, so we're grateful. Well, thank you so much, Attorney General. What a privilege to talk to you and to just bring our listeners on today. There was a display in question that really surrounded a 6-foot-plus tall door decoration in the main hallway of a school building. And it included a biblical reference covering much of the Dora and a photo of Linus from a Charlie Brown Christmas with these words, "For unto us is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord." That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown, Linus said. Well, the principal, Cara Trevino, reportedly said it was an issue of separation of church and state. And the claim was is that Deidre Shannon, a clinic aide at Patterson Middle School in Killeen Independent School District, is forcing her personal religious beliefs on students by decorating her door in this manner. In 2013, Governor Rick Perry signed into law the Merry Christmas Bill. This bill protects school teachers and others from litigation and harassment. Now, Attorney General Paxton, your office sent a letter to the Killeen Independent School District Board of Trustees in response to their forced removal of a Christmas decoration. Could you tell our listeners today what was the essence of your letter?
Well, the essence of our letter was that we didn't feel like the staffer was violating any law, that she was perfectly within her First Amendment rights to express her views on her faith, including this Linus poster. Mm-hmm. And we also let them know we'd be willing, if they were sued by some outside anti-religious group, that we would be willing to defend them. And so that was the essence of our letter. It was very simple and to the point. And unfortunately, they went ahead and voted 6-1 to not allow this woman to put this poster up on her door.
Now, let me ask you this, sir. This is obviously breaking the law. And how is the school board breaking the law? And you may even cover just a moment the 2013 signing into law, the Merry Christmas Bill, so all of our listeners will understand the context of this.
Yeah, so in 2013, the legislature passed what we call the Merry Christmas Law, which was really designed to further protect people's First Amendment rights. The reality is, under the Texas Constitution, the federal Constitution, you know, school teachers and students do not, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, leave their constitutional right to express their views at the gatehouse, at the doorhouse, at the schoolhouse. So that's why we're interested in this case. And unfortunately, the school board made, we think, a poor decision. And as I understand it, a lawsuit has already been filed by the by Texas Values on behalf of this woman. And it's our intention to intervene in that case and file on behalf of Texas to protect constitutional rights.
You know, it's just really amazing, isn't it, how many times the phrase separation of church and state appears in the conversations along the way in the country, but yet it's found nowhere in the Constitution. Why do you think that is used so much to attack religious liberty across America?
Well, it's a convenient use of words that Jefferson used in a letter to a Baptist church in Virginia, but it certainly he certainly had no intention of stopping people from exercising their First Amendment rights. And look, he was obviously part of putting our constitutional documents together, and what they put down in words was very different than this idea of separation of church and state. They put down that there couldn't be an establishment of a church or a religion by a state. But it also very carefully laid out the idea that people had a right to express their personal religious views and that the government could not stop them.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, and we're about to go to a break, and thank you for being on today, Attorney General Paxton from Texas. And here's the question, just a brief answer due to our time, but are you encouraged with the direction of what you see happening in the nation today about matters like religious liberty? Do you think people are beginning to stand up and say enough is enough, or are you discouraged? Talk to our viewers about the way you see it from the state where you dwell, as well as what you see happening across America.
Well, we certainly see attacks on religious liberty on a fairly regular basis, whether it was our cheerleaders in Kuntz, who were told they couldn't have banners at a football game with Bible verses on them, or whether it's this woman who, you know, recently, just in the last week, put the Linus poster up. So what I am encouraged is that people are starting to understand that they do have the right. They do have rights to express their religious views, and they are willing to stand up and fight for them. So I applaud this woman who is willing to probably some risk to her job to stand up and say, no, these are my rights, and I'm going to stand up and fight for them. So that, to me, is what makes the difference. People willing to stand up and have the courage not to just walk away, but say, I will take the risk because it's worth it, not just for me, but for our country.
Absolutely. Well, Attorney General Rex Paxton, it has been a pleasure to talk with you today. And when we come back on the Washington Watch, we're going to talk with the president of Ohio's Right to Life, especially after the decision made by Governor Kasich yesterday regarding the issue of abortion. Please stay tuned for the Washington Watch. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, our Holy Land tour in March is filling up. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We only go one time a year to Israel, and that's in March, and our tour leaves the 9th and gets back on the 17th. And as I say, we don't have a whole lot of space left on this tour. So if you'd like to go with us and see the Holy Land, you need to give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, with an S, option 5. And leave us your name and your address. We'll send you a brochure or go online at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. Again, we're going to Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Jericho and Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River, all those places and much, much more. So join us on this very special tour of Israel in March.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. In the middle of a self-congratulating media brouhaha over fake news stories, one would not normally look to legendary actor Denzel Washington for clarity. Washington was victim to an actual fake news story, which went viral and claimed that he had endorsed Donald Trump for president. Denzel, therefore, had this to say about mainstream media. If you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you do read, you're misinformed, unquote. He continued, in our society, now it's just first who cares, get it out there. We don't care who it hurts, we don't care who we destroy, we don't care if it's true, unquote. He told the reporters, so what a responsibility you all have to tell the truth, unquote. That's a strong reminder coming from a man like Denzel Washington. Let's hope the media has the capability of getting it. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch. I'm Ronnie Floyd, senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas. I do hope that you will follow us on Twitter at Ronnie Floyd. I'm standing in today for my friend, the president of the Family Research Council, Dr. Tony Perkins, and you can follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins, and we hope that you will do that. We've already had a really strong show today. We were talking earlier this afternoon with Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina, and we just finished with Attorney General Paxton from the great state of Texas relating to a law or relating to the Merry Christmas law signed into order by Governor Rick Perry a couple of years ago or so. And today we're about to enter a conversation with the president of the Right to Life in the state of Ohio. On Tuesday, Governor John Kasich of Ohio signed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. It's landmark legislation which poses a historic challenge to Roe v. Wade. But at the same time, he also vetoed the measure, commonly known as the heartbeat bill, that would ban abortion at the first sign of a heartbeat. Now, here to talk about this today with us in a moment is Michael Kanadakis, and he is the president of the Ohio Right to Life. Welcome to the show, Michael. We're glad to have you this afternoon.
Pastor Floyd, thanks for having me, and Merry Christmas, sir.
Amen. Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to you and your family and to everyone there in the state of Ohio. Now, yesterday, Governor Kasich vetoed a bill that would have banned abortions when a fetal heartbeat can be detected, which is as early as 6 weeks. But he signed the bill that bans the practice after 20 weeks of pregnancy. In a statement, Governor said the heartbeat bill is clearly contrary to the United States Supreme Court's ruling on abortion. He notes that similar measures would have been struck down by the high court and that the Ohio bill would face the same fate. Now, Ohio Right to Life supports Governor Kasich's decision to bypass the heartbeat legislative approach at this time. And while it must have been difficult, the current makeup of a radically pro-abortion Supreme Court required the governor to exercise great restraint, further filling the current vacancy on the court by our next president will still leave the court with a pro-abortion majority. But this past summer, The Texas regulations for clinic were ruled unconstitutional. Governor Kasich has been the most pro-life governor in Ohio history, and so we're very, very grateful for that. In all of this, let me ask you this question, and that is, I know you must have had some level of disappointment that the heartbeat bill didn't get signed, but you were probably aware of the challenge. Is that not right, Michael?
Oh, that's perfectly put, Pastor, and thank you for the lead into that. You articulated the issue very, very well for your listeners across the country. And I'll tell you, you know, it was a bittersweet day yesterday because, sadly and unfortunately, we live in a country where nine men and women who were unelected by the people sit on a court in Washington, D.C. and dictate when we can protect babies. It's tragic, and it's been going on since 1973, which led to the death of 50 million babies. And here's what we do know. The current makeup of the court is 5-3, as you indicated, and 5 pro-abortion, 3 pro-life. And even with Trump's first nominee, we still lose 5-4, so we've got to be very careful what we put in front of the court. I keep reminding my pro-life friends that there's 3 branches of government, not just 2. Because you get something through Congress or your state legislature, and you get the governor or president to sign it, that's not the end of the battle. There's that third branch, which is the federal court, the unelected federal judges that keep striking down everything that you and I and all of our listeners believe to be holy, whether it be the Texas regulations, marriage between one man and one woman, or other pro-life measures. This is a vicious court, so we've got to be very careful, sir.
Yes, no question about that. But let me ask you this, Michael, because it appears to me, based off of what I have been able to know about this issue in the state of Ohio, I mean, this is still historic legislation for the pro-life cause. Am I correct on that?
You nailed it, Pastor, and I'll tell you, Ohio now has the strongest pro-life laws in the nation. There's 12 other states that have passed and enacted the 20-week ban because it's still pre-viability. Sadly, Roe v. Wade says babies can't be protected until they're viable, which is 24 weeks. But the law we just passed is 20 weeks, and we joined states like Nebraska, South Carolina, Texas, Wisconsin, West Virginia, and we believe now we can lead the charge through the courts because the courts ruled in these abortion decisions, whether it's Roe or Carhart or Casey, that, look, if viability changes over the years, they made these decisions many decades ago, we'll revisit Roe v. Wade, and now's the time to do that. Because as you know, Pastor, children's hospitals across the country are filled with premature babies that are born at 21, 22 weeks and growing up to live happy and healthy lives. So it's time to get rid of this archaic line in the sand that they call 24 weeks viability and overturn Roe and bring it back to the states to make this decision.
Yeah, Michael, do you feel like there will come a day when Congress bans this whole issue of supporting a group like Planned Parenthood and granting them money to the killing of the unborn child and to all of that? Do you feel like there will be a day when Congress gets enough people involved and the president would be behind it and take that strong stand, that strong pro-life view?
Pastor, I am hopefully, and I'm going to predict on your show here, that's going to happen in 2017. Elections have consequences, and the nation spoke, and we have a new president-elect who said multiple times, I will only elect pro-life judges. He said during the campaign trail, Planned Parenthood shouldn't get money for what they do. So we have a pro-life House, we have a pro-life Senate, that we can get a bill through for the president to sign. Roe v. Wade never said that Planned Parenthood, a corporation, has a constitutional right to our tax dollars. So we can strip them of all the money we give them and give them to pregnancy centers, give them to people that are helping the poor and the needy in our churches. They have no constitutional right to our tax dollars, so we should do that in 2017, sir.
Well, thank you, Michael, for your boldness, and I agree completely. When we talk about strategy, and sometimes people are so committed to an issue that they fail to be able to know that any advancement is progress. I was in a private meeting back probably, I think it was in April, in Washington, D.C. with some major members of Congress. And in that meeting, one of the most well-known men in America said this to the group. And he said, you know, in Washington, we made a commitment, those of us that believe like we believe, that we will take anything that is at least an inch or a step, because if we take enough steps, even though they seem small at the present time, If we do enough of those in a row, we're going to be able to see a big win. And Americans are sick and tired of inactivity and no progress. So, Michael, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, strategy is important, and so many of us, we need to remember that even though we're highly convictional people.
Yeah, I think all pro-life people such as yourself and myself and all your listeners would love to be able to wave a magic wand and end this yesterday. You know, yes. We're the only nonprofit I know of, Ohio Right to Life, that is trying to work ourselves out of business. We don't want to exist. We want there to be zero abortions. I'll go back to practicing law, and my staff will go find other jobs. But you're absolutely right, Pastor, and you nailed it. That incremental approach that we're taking now, it continues to work because it saves lives. We're changing the culture. We're changing hearts and minds. And if we could get rid of it all, you know, if Donald Trump has the opportunity to appoint 2, 3, 4 justices, then let's take that fight to the Supreme Court, then, because then we will have enough members. But until such time, this incremental approach that we're doing is saving lives. We're at historic low number of abortions in our state's history in the state of Ohio. We are at historic lows. Historic
That's
lows
amazing.
In the number of abortion clinics, too, sir.
That's incredible. Well, Ohio plays such a major role in American politics, and I want to thank you and so many there with the Right to Life in Ohio, and there are some fantastic leaders in Ohio, and great conservative leaders and great Christian conservative leaders, and we're really, really grateful for the way you stand and the way others stand for what is right. When you look, Michael, at what is going on in the country right now. And I'm talking again, just to remind the viewers, with the president of the Right to Life in the state of Ohio. And so, Michael, when you look at what is happening in the country and you look at the issue of abortion, the life issue, are you encouraged with what you see happening? Are you at least favorable to what you see happening? And do you think that one day that we could live to see in our generation a change of Roe v. Wade that was adopted and legalized abortion in 1973 by the United States Supreme Court?
Yes, Pastor, I truly mean that from the bottom of my heart, my soul. With the election of Donald Trump, I know for the rest of my life we are going to have a conservative Supreme Court, because while he'll get one, we believe we have at least another one at some point within his first 4 years on the Supreme Court, number one. Number two, you're seeing states from across the country, maybe not in California and New York, but the other 48 states passing continued pro-life laws. You know, just today, the New York Times wrote an editorial pulling out their hair saying all these pro-life laws are being passed across the country. So you know you're making progress when the New York Times is upset.
That's right.
But to be very frank here, we've taken this battle back to the states because of the inactivity with the Obama administration. And we passed something at the congressional level. Now Obama just vetoes it. And the amount of victories we're getting are incredible. There are 33 of our states in the United States are run by pro-life governors.
Yes.
And we have super majorities in our legislatures, too, that are pro-life. So we've taken the battle away from the Beltway, and we brought it to the states, and we're saving lives now. And now with the election of Donald Trump, it's time to take it back to D.C., too, and do it simultaneously.
Well, that I believe that day is going to be there also. I told
yes,
my
sir.
People this past Sunday, I spoke to the life issue for a brief moment in introduction, talking about the value of life from the womb to the tomb. But I really think that it's really important that if we will do what is seemingly moving toward the direction it needs to, along with the advancement of technology, which illustrates for us the real traumatic nature of abortion, has been a huge education for the American people. And I've sensed a real change in attitude even in the last 2 years. And so I'm very, very grateful to that. But I really, when I look at the election of our president-elect Donald Trump, who will take office on the 20th of January, with the promises made relating to the Supreme Court justices, it appears also with the other appointments that he's making to his cabinet, and I know that any Right to Life commitment from your organization and others across the country and the world would have to look at, okay, what do these people believe about the life issue? But there's a lot of them that are very pro-life, which is very encouraging, because to me, when someone is pro-life, it shapes the way they see things about life and about the value of life and about God being the creator. And this is special, and we do not need to lose it. You have any thoughts on that today?
I do, Pastor, and thank you for that lead in there. You know, as a Greek American, what I am, you know, Reince Priebus, who was named chief of staff to Donald Trump, is a Greek American as well, and I know him personally, and he's devoutly pro-life. So the chief of staff, the gentleman who has the president-elect's ear and the president's ear in a couple weeks, will always safeguard our issue. Kellyanne Conway, one of his senior advisors, was the pollster for National Right to Life. And then you look at Ben Carson, now Rick Perry getting named as energy secretary. All of his inner circle, the people he relies and trusts on the most, are devoutly pro-life, Pastor. And I can't recall a president, Democrat or Republican, in my lifetime, I'm 43, that had so many strong pro-lifers surrounding him.
Yeah, I agree completely, Michael. And I tell you what, I'm so thankful for organizations like the Right to Life. I have the privilege of speaking this February at Rose Day, which is going to be a major pro-life event in the state of Oklahoma. In fact, they've asked me to speak, and we'll be speaking there at the Oklahoma Capitol building. And it is the largest pro-life gathering in the state of Oklahoma, one of the most conservative states in the United States. And I'm going to be the speaker for that event. And so I'm real passionate about that. But in our final 2 or 3 minutes here together, Michael, a lot of people that talk about the life issue and those who oppose the life issue, oftentimes those that oppose get real discouraged that it seems that the only thing we're concerned about is simply the baby in the womb, which is obviously a huge concern, and I would never minimize that by any means. It's human life from the moment that baby is conceived. But they become discouraged with our attitude, all because of they do not understand the value of that we understand the value of life from the womb to the tomb. Now, we're about to come to conclusion, Michael. In about 30 seconds, can you tell us about your commitment to seeing human life preserved in all kind of ways from the time we're born to the time we die?
Quickly, you know, my wife and I are living examples. Both of our children are adopted. Our son is African American from inner city Cleveland, and our daughter we adopted from Guatemala. We believe in adoption as the most precious choice over abortion, and we need to continue to streamline our adoption laws to make sure that women understand that they can place their child for adoption, number one. Number two, we fully believe in our pregnancy centers. It's our best defense for a woman of lesser means to be able to go to a pregnancy center, get prenatal care, get ultrasound, and get diapers and what have you. That's where the boots hit the ground, the rubber meets the road, and then end-of-life issues as well. In about a week or so, our great governor is going to sign a bill banning euthanasia in the state of Ohio. We've never been able to get that done. We got it done in Ohio. So we believe in that womb-to-tomb concept, sir. We believe in making sure people have access to a doctor.
Outstanding.
To Planned Parenthood.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being on. Michael Ganadakis, the president of Ohio Right to Life. You're a champion. Thank you for championing human life. Thanks for watching and listening to Washington Watch today. Tell your friends about this broadcast. It's been a powerful time together. We hope to see you soon again. On behalf of Tony Perkins, thanks for listening today.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.